I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Sweat. Why is something we all do, an adaptive body function that has allowed humans to survive hot temperatures, the cause of so much embarrassment? We spend billions of dollars a year to cover up the smell and evidence of sweat. According to our guest, science journalist Sarah Everts, our ancestors from 2,000 years ago also worried about sweat and body odor, fearing it would turn off prospective lovers. Her new book is The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. She writes about another side of perspiration, the fact that we spend money and time in gyms and spas working up a good sweat. Communal sweating in saunas is popular in many parts of the world. In fact, she checked some of them out, even attending the World Sauna Theater Championships in the Netherlands. Today on Radio Times, breaking the taboo, the silence about sweat. Sarah Everts is a professor at Carleton University School of Journalism in Canada. She joins us by Skype. Sarah Everts, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And to make sure our listeners can join our conversation, you can always send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I have a feeling this is where all your interviews begin, but I'll ask it anyway. Of all the bodily functions, what was so compelling, what was so interesting to you about sweat?
Yeah. Well, you know, like many of us, I've gone through my life feeling a little bit mortified by my own sweat. I worried that I might sweat too much. You know, during any workout, I'm grabbing a towel during the warm-up. I always feel like I was the first to sweat on, you know, any group hike. And, you know, I'm also a science journalist, and so I knew that evolutionary biologists count sweating as one of the unique things that, you know, makes humans humans, along with, you know, big brains and near nakedness. And so I thought, okay, I need to dig into the science of sweat to find serenity instead of shame in all the sweating that I certainly do.
Well, I do want to get to evolution, but I was also, your book obviously got me thinking about sweat myself. It is one of those bodily functions, if I can put this delicately, that we do in public, you know, that we don't have a kind of control over as we do largely our other bodily functions. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think a lot of the stigma and the shame that we have about it is because it's entirely out of our control. I mean, if you think about those other things that we do, that our bodies do, that we might be mortified by, like farting or burping, right? You can hold those back even just for a microsecond and, you know, remove yourself from a social situation and, you know, deal with it. But honestly, when your body gets the cool down directive, those sweat glands open and the floods start pouring and there is nothing you can do about it. And, you know, humans don't like to be out of control. And I think that, you know, leads to a lot of the kind of anxiety about sweating.
What are we going to do to the listeners who don't want to hear this conversation, Sarah?
I'm sorry.
Including our engineer, Al, is kind of nodding his head. No, I'm teasing here. Well, let's talk about evolution and how sweat serves us. It is, as you have told many people, it's really our superpower. How so?
So, humans aren't the only animal in the animal kingdom to sweat to cool down, but we are very, very good at it, and we produce voluminous amounts of sweat, and we do so profusely. And it has helped us throughout our evolutionary history. So, the way that it works is when your body gets the cool down directive, your 2 to 5 million sweat pores on your skin open up and they source sweat from the watery parts of your blood. So it's sweat is just pretty much blood minus the red blood cells and platelets, the big stuff. And when it goes to the surface of your skin, the hot core of your body evaporates away that sweat, whisking away heat from your body to the atmosphere. And this works really well because we are naked, right? We have a lot of surface area off of which we can do this cooling evaporation. If you think about a dog pants to cool down because its tongue is the only naked part of its body, and it's evaporating water off its tongue using saliva instead of sweat, whereas we have our entire surface area as this cooling platform. And in our evolutionary history, this benefited us because, you know, most of the prey that we would hunt on the savanna, for example, sprint faster than us. But because we have this huge surface area for cooling, we can cool down while on the run. And so, you know, our prey would sprint away, but because most of them are furry, they have to stop and cool down shortly thereafter, whereas we can keep running, catch up, forcing them to sprint again and again and again until they expire from heat stroke. And, you know, heat stroke is terrible. It's a terrible way to die. But because we can exercise and cool down at the same time, that's that superpower part of it, we could, you know, live and hunt in many parts of the earth. And, you know, sweating is one of the reasons we're able to dominate the earth for better or for worse, right?
So it's our near nakedness. I mean, the fact that we don't have fur like a dog or like a lion or some kind of animal that we might, our ancestors might have been chasing across the savanna.
Yeah, and this, what it's called evaporative cooling, this like evaporation of water so that water whisks away heat, this is the most efficient way to cool down anybody. And animals that don't have sweat glands all over their body rely on other bodily fluids. Mm-hmm. So our closest neighbor, the chimp, like a dog, pants using saliva. But other animals rely on other bodily fluids, like seals pee on themselves, and honeybees vomit, vultures poop on their legs to cool down. Yeah. So, you know, when you think about what could have been, evolution really granted us sort of a much better option in having, you know, millions of devoted glands just to do this one thing.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about an air conditioner in someone's home. It sort of operates under that same principle, right?
Yeah, certainly we've invented really smart ways to cool down. But actually, you bring to mind, you know, when you're standing in front of a fan, right, you feel cooler because wind is blowing away that wet water on the surface of your skin and distributing it further away so that more evaporation of water can happen faster. And that's why dogs pant, because they're like literally blowing that hot, wet air off the, you know, area above their tongue so that, you know, drier air comes in and more water can more easily evaporate away. So yeah, it's funny how we've invented tools that do help us cool down faster.
What about the difference between dry heat and humid heat? We're you're in a part of Canada that's rather like Philadelphia, gets really hot and humid, like a swamp in the summer. What's the difference in terms of its impact on a human body?
So yeah, it's a little bit like what I was just saying in that, so when you are in really dry heat, right, your body is evaporating water molecules off your skin, turning it into, you know, vapor, right? And when there's not a lot of water already in the atmosphere, it's pretty easy for that to happen. But when you're in a really humid area, you need like a lot more liquid on top of your body to really push those air molecules up into the atmosphere, because the air around your body is already chock full of evaporated water, right? And so there's this kind of counter pressure. And so, yeah, it's often harder to cool down in humid parts of the world. And you need to be really sweaty in order to have a lot of water to kind of push up into the atmosphere.
You know, I'm thinking about sometimes evolution works really fast, sometimes it's really slow. And I'm also thinking about, you know, the western part of the United States, and frankly, some of the western parts of Canada, you know, hitting temperatures of 115, 130. I think it was 130 in Death Valley. Can human beings survive in that kind of temperature?
Yeah, well, it's really hard. But you know, our ability to sweat efficiently is probably going to be, you know, our superpower for avoiding the climate apocalypse or surviving it at any rate. And, you know, it's kind of ironic in a dark, macabre way that, you know, here humans have, you know, relied a little bit on their sweat to live in all parts of the world. We've been able to dominate the world and, you know, we're the cause of this climate apocalypse. And yet, that same trait is going to help us survive it. It seems kind of unfair, but yes.
Here we are.
It will be. Yeah, here we are.
Do men sweat more than women?
Oh, yeah. I get this question a lot. So it's really interesting. There's not a huge difference between the way that women and men sweat. Women may have actually a higher number of sweat glands per, you know, surface area. And men might have a slightly higher flux, like it comes out faster. But quite honestly, most of the differences people notice between men and women are a matter of size versus volume, right? So yeah, we sweat the same, despite that whole myth about, you know, women glistening and, you know, men perspiring. I certainly perspire, if not sweat floods.
That's so funny you say that. I remember as a kid growing up, women glow, men perspire, and pigs sweat.
Right. And that's what's funny. Pigs don't sweat. Horses sweat. But what's interesting about horse sweat is that they are able to cool down but they're not as efficient as humans are. We are actually far more efficient at cooling our bodies down from sweat than horses or cows, which are the other animal that relies on sweat. All other animals are just not that good at this evaporative cooling. And it's because we have this naked body surface area. We just have so much real estate off of which we can cool off.
Almost, I'm going to break here. What's the chemistry in sweat? I mean, it tastes salty. So as you said, it's from our blood, but is salt the kind of main chemical in our sweat?
So salt is a main chemical because of we're salty oceans inside, right? But quite honestly, anything that's circulating in your blood can come out in sweat. So vitamins, glucose, which is our body's energy molecule, anything that's circulating in your blood percolates out, and it just tastes salty and looks watery because, you know, it's the watery parts of blood. But sweat is so much more complicated than you would imagine. And you know, anything that you eat or drink can percolate out in your sweat, including your vices. I had my sweat tested, and I can tell you about that later. But
ooh,
yeah,
yes.
Also biomarkers of disease, so you can diagnose some cancers from the molecules that are coming out in sweat, in part just because, again, it's just the liquidy parts of blood. So anything that you could learn from taking a blood sample, not anything, but many things that you can learn from taking a blood sample, you can also learn by analyzing sweat.
Well, yes, we are talking about sweat on Radio Times today. And again, our guest is Sarah Everts. She's got a new book. It's called The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. And again, you can join our conversation. Any questions or comments, nothing off limits. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. It has been very hot, which means we've all been sweating. And even though it's a completely natural response to the heat, why is perspiration so embarrassing? We're talking with science journalist Sarah Everts. She's got a new book, The Joy of Sweat. It's about this underappreciated and frankly life-saving temperature-regulating body function, how it has served us through the millennia. Well, let's talk about your sweat then, Sarah, since you raised the issue and you had it analyzed. What do we need to know about you?
Well, I have a secret vice, and my secret vice is caffeine. So I actually got my that sounds, you know, not that macabre, but hang with me. So I actually got my fingerprints analyzed, chemically analyzed, because a fingerprint is actually just a sweat print, right? They're inked with sweat. And a forensic chemist took a single index fingerprint of mine. And instead of looking at the whorls and swirls, like how it looks and, you know, comparing that to, you know, a criminal database, she analyzed the tiny residues of sweat that were left over in that fingerprint. And she could tell that I had had my morning latte. Hmm. Now, here's the other thing, though. Had I spiked my coffee with vodka or done a line of cocaine or done any other drugs, that also would have come out in my fingerprint sweat. And so she's been working with British law enforcement. And for example, they lifted a fingerprint from a window left by a stalker. And she could tell that he had been drinking alcohol and actually doing cocaine just from that single fingerprint. And, you know, it's really interesting because, of course, you know, when you take a fingerprint from a crime scene, and if it doesn't get a hit in a database, then you don't know anything about the people who were, you know, present when something happened. Whereas, you know, if you can analyze the chemical residues left in a fingerprint, you can learn something about the people there. And, you know, she's working on being able to distinguish vegans from meat eaters, biological sex, age, things like that. And so this is, you know, on the horizon for forensic science, which is, you know, both exciting and a little bit alarming if you care about privacy and surveillance, because of course, who else is going to use this information? Well, perhaps employers checking on you by lifting a fingerprint from your office to see if you came to work intoxicated, or health insurers trying to decide whether to, you know, support you because you may have a pre-existing condition. So there's some dystopian asides to this, but you know, fingerprints aren't the only part of our sweat that we leave behind. Really constantly dripping, or at least I am. And, you know, we love our Fitbits. We love personal measurement. And I know that there are a lot of electronic engineers out there that are thinking of designing and or in the middle of designing sweat patches, like a Band-Aid that collects your sweat and does some analysis and sends a pulse to your smartphone or your smartwatch saying, you know, hey, Sarah, you had one too many cocktails. Maybe you should take a cab home. Or to an athlete, hey, I know that you are trying to work on your sprints, so you need to be doing anaerobic exercise instead of the aerobic exercise, because lactate levels, for example, coming out in your sweat tell the difference. So yeah, lots of applications, some a little alarming.
Well, you also tell a story of a woman from South Africa. She was sweating red, and I guess her doctors are trying to figure out what the heck was going on with her. Well, it turned out she was eating just bags and bags of this snack, this South African snack, and I guess what it was, the food coloring in the snack that was pouring through her pores.
Yeah, it was a spicy tomato corn chip. And, you know, she was eating 45 bags a week. So she had, you know, quite a fetish for these chips. But, you know, because, you know, anything that we eat ends up in our blood system, you know, it was circulating around and there was just so much of it in her body. It was percolating out in her sweat, kind of like garlic odor does when you've had a hard night of hummus. But, you know, a lot of people, think that sweat is this detox method just because, you know, some things that we don't like are coming out, right? You know, also a hard night of alcohol, you kind of reek like booze, right? But sweat is not a detox method. And in fact, if you think it is, you might not really understand how the body works, because if we detoxed by sweat, because sweat is the watery parts of blood, you would have to literally sweat out all of the watery parts of your blood to get any nasty stuff circulating around out, which would leave you dehydrated and, you know, likely dead. Instead, we have the kidney, right, that filters your blood and, you know, dispatches the bad stuff out in pee. But yeah, if something comes out in your sweat, it's incidental. It's just because, you know, it's circulating around in your blood and it might not have hit your kidney yet.
Well, that's interesting because Joel just came in with a question directly to that, saying, I practice hot yoga and sweat profusely. We're talking about cooling the body down, but when we sweat, do we actually sweat out toxins? And you're saying, no, it's really the kidney's job to do that.
Yeah, so certainly, probably if there's toxins in your blood, some of that will, you know, percolate out because it's coming along for the ride, along with all the other good stuff that is also coming out, along for the ride, like the hormones you need and vitamins and glucose. So if it comes out, if anything comes out in your sweat, it's just, you know, incidental. But, you know, there is a euphoria that people get after sweating. And that's, you know, often known as a runner's high, right? And that's happy biochemistry that happens when you're sweating. And you know, it's endorphins and epinephrine. And so when you do a workout or hot yoga or go to the sauna, these happy chemicals, you know, show up. And so you kind of get an emotional detox because you're literally making biochemicals that make you happy. But it's not a chemical detox. This is not a way to get rid of actual bad things circulating in your blood.
Yeah, I hear you. What about the connection between sweating and nervousness or fear or embarrassment? I mean, what happens that would activate our sweat glands?
Oh, it's such an interesting thing, both in terms of like the volumes of sweat we produce when we're anxious, as well as like the smell of anxiety. We can talk about both. But what's interesting is that although humans have sweat glands over our entire bodies, all mammals have sweat glands in their paws, but they don't use those sweat glands in their paws for temperature control. They use it to provide a little grip when they are running away from a predator, right? Huh. So their paws are often very dry, and you know you need a tiny bit of moisture, not a lot, to have grip. And so when our hands get super sweaty, when we're stressed out or anxious or, you know, meeting our secret crush, it's a vestigial response to, anxiety. You know,
wow.
But you know, these days when we're stressed out, we don't have to climb a tree to escape. But all mammals have that response. We just, you know, evolution is such a cut and paste thing. You know, it was like, oh, let's try putting it over the whole body, and oh wow, look, it works for thermoregulation in humans.
Fascinating. It's funny, and I'm saying it right now, my palms are sweating when I think of heights. You know, really tall buildings, being at the top of tall buildings. My hands are sweating right now, even
yeah,
as I say it. Such an interesting response. You know, I was also thinking, this goes back decades, to the Kennedy-Nixon debates. I think this was probably 1960. But there was, you know, candidate Kennedy, cool as a cucumber. There was candidate Nixon sweating profusely. And I think that was one of the takeaways from that debate. One of the reasons that the Nixon lost was that he just looked so sweaty.
Yeah, well, we associate sweat with all sorts of stigma. But, you know, also we do know that we sweat more when we're anxious and nervous. And, you know, perhaps Nixon was very worried. He certainly had, there was reasons he probably might be very worried. But, you know, I do wish that we didn't stigmatize sweat so much because, you know, some people are sweating that volume just because, you know, biologically they are super sweaty. But, you know, certainly others are doing so because, you know, they do, you know, are feeling anxious. And, you know, what's really interesting is also the smell of anxiety. You know, we think of our body odor print and, you know, you smell your own unique way. I do too. But law enforcement have noticed that when people go into interrogations, they show up smelling like themselves, but they all leave with this top note of like anxiety. They all leave smelling the same. And, you know, when scientists did t-shirt studies to follow up on this, they made some people wear tight t-shirts and put them in front of a nature documentary or a very scary film. And then they gave the t-shirts to, you know, an independent panel of experts just to sniff through, or, you know, strangers. And these strangers could tell who was nervous and who was not from just the odor emanating off the fabric. And because you know, this, we can identify fear in others from odor. The military is super interested in funding this research because you can manage in a tank situation in combat.
Sure.
If you have one soldier freaking out and, you know, starting to stink of anxiety, that could spread to others in the, you know, the small space and, you know, perhaps compromise the mission. And so they're very interested in, you know, figuring out what exactly that molecule is and capturing it like you would a poison gas.
That is Sarah Everts. She is a science journalist, and she's got a new book, The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Got lots of comments coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. Let me just pick up on a couple of questions, Sarah. Do we get to, do we become more proficient at smelling the more we smell? I'm thinking about if you listen to a good stereo, the more you listen, the more you hear. Does that also help with smelling, that you just become a better smeller the more you do it?
Yeah, it is true. So I actually had my armpit sniffed by a professional nose. This is a woman who works on contract for deodorant companies. And, you know, when you see products advertising, you know, works, you know, to prevent odor for 24 hours, blah, blah, blah. She's the one who's like using her nose to do the experiments. And, you know, we have two armpits. And so, you know, science loves a control. So one, you put the product in, and the other one, you don't. And she, when she was smelling my armpits, as a way to kind of break the ice, because, oh my God, it's a bit awkward, I have to say, as
I
a subject.
Can only imagine. Yes, right.
I was asking her, so, yeah, how do you become a nose? And yeah, you practice, and yeah, practice makes perfect.
Like a sommelier, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And what's so funny about her job is that she's not always sniffing, you know, armpits, or actually, you know, she sniffs poopy diapers, you know, for, you know, diaper companies who, you know,
I guess someone's got to do it, right?
But she sniffs good stuff too. Right. She sniffs like coffee and whiskey. And, you know, she's like she doesn't consider any odor to be bad. It's just either intense or not. Or, you know, she thinks about the component parts. But yeah, it's a funny and wonderful job.
When we hug each other or kiss each other, even shake hands, is that our way of smelling this other person?
Yeah, I know. This is the part which, if you were not grossed out to this point, you are going to be now. So most human greetings involve getting quite up close to another person, whether it's a cheek kiss, a bow, a hug, or a handshake, where you actually literally get hands-on collection of somebody else's smell. And one of my favorite experiments was done by a group in Israel at the Weizmann Institute. And they videotaped people meeting for the first time and shaking hands. And the people who had just met somebody new lifted their hands up to their nose afterwards to sniff, uh-huh. you know, what had just been collected in the handshake. And they did it unconsciously. And in fact, some of the study subjects were so appalled by their own behavior that they later saw that they, you know, accused the scientists of having fabricated the videos, right? And so, yeah, we are constantly taking in each other's body odor print and, you know, using it to make social decisions. So, you know, even parents can identify a baby just hours, their own baby, just hours after birth. Siblings can identify each other, even if they haven't seen each other for a couple of years, based on that body odor print. So we're sniffing each other whether we like it or not.
Fair enough. Here's a tweet from Morgan. Morgan says, I'm a letter carrier in Delaware County and have been sweating like crazy this summer. I get asked if the heat or the cold is worse to work in. Morgan says, it's definitely the heat. Does that make sense to you, Sarah?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, cold, you can keep putting stuff on to keep warm. At some point, you know, you can't really strip when you're a letter carrier down to your boxers or your sports bra or whatever it is that you wear. Yeah, it's hard. And, you know, in really humid weather, you want to have as much surface area of your skin exposed so that, you know, you have more ability to evaporate water away. And you know, the more exposed skin you have, you know, the better. So yeah, I feel for you as a letter carrier because you kind of got to wear your outfit.
and it's been really hot in the Philadelphia area. Here's a question from Carl. I went to the humid Northeast, then to the dry climate, and then back again each time. It took me 2 years for my skin to adapt to the climate. Is there a certain amount of time it takes to adjust to particular climates? Does your skin adapt? The idea of living in a humid environment and then a dry environment and then a humid environment again. What's happening with our skin and our sweat glands?
Yeah, well, your sweat glands are learning about your environment. It's really interesting because, you know, for example, athletes going to Tokyo, where it's going to be probably the hottest Olympics on record, they have been working out in really hot areas to teach their bodies to sweat more and more efficiently for that new, you know, to be able to perform in that kind of environment. And so our bodies do learn to accommodate new environments, whether they're dry or super humid. But there is a baseline that, you know, is, you know, contingent on your genetics, but also where you spent the first couple of years of your life. Because when you're born with all your sweat glands, mm-hmm. but they're not all fully active. You have to wait until your toddler years for that to happen. And so in those years, your sweat glands are learning about that early environment. And so that contributes to your baseline. But yes, certainly, your body does make adjustments. It's called acclimatization to a new environment so that, yeah, it can do a better job of keeping you cool.
And we're almost having a break here, but that's what athletes are doing to prepare for the Olympics in Japan. It's just figuring out how to be more efficient in their sweating.
Yeah. So it's a couple of things. You know, it's if they are used to competing in a cool environment, it's, you know, learning how to, you know, optimize their best in a hot environment. And it's also literally training their sweat glands to open up and sweat more because, wow. you know, the hotter the place that you are competing, the more you need to sweat because you are, yeah, not only are you hot from, you know, the environment around you, but your extreme exercise is also producing a lot of heat. So really their sweat glands need to be at the max that they possibly can.
We are talking about sweat, our sweat glands, today on Radio Times. Our guest is science journalist Sarah Evarts, and she's got a new book called The Joy of Sweat. Much more after this very short break. And again, send us your questions and comments, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with science journalist Sarah Evarts. She argues in her new book that there should be no shame in perspiration. Instead, we should celebrate this critical temperature-regulating body function that has been one of the keys to our success as the human species. And again, her book is called The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Sarah, I do want to talk about saunas, I guess the sort of opposite of what we've been talking about, but we have a couple of questions about heat rash. Jean says, can you speak to heat rash on the skin? Mary says, the reason I don't like sweating is that I have sensitive skin, and if I could cool down without the heat rash, I'd appreciate the autonomic response more. Can you speak to heat and heat rash?
Yeah, that's really frustrating, isn't it? When effectively heat rash is when your body is having an allergic reaction to your own skin. So it's kind of like an inflammatory reaction. And yeah, that I feel for you. And I guess, you know, ideally you would want to try to not sweat in volumes, so try and exercise in cool weather. But yeah, there's not a lot that you can do about that, and I have all the sympathy.
All the sympathy in the world. Yeah, thanks for those questions. Well, let's talk about saunas. You lived in Germany for a while where saunas are popular. There's saunas and popular in other parts of the world, and they're all these really fascinating rituals. What is it about human beings need to sweat together, I guess, sweat communally?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because, you know, in most parts of the world, whether now or in history, there have been what I call sweating ceremonies. So you think of here in the Americas, the indigenous people, the Native Americans have their sweat lodges. In the Middle East, it's the hammams. In Korea, the jimjilbangs. In Russia, the banya. And, you know, the Finns have exported the sauna around the Western world. And so there's something about us all that craves a good sweat. And I think it has to do with that kind of cathartic release of happy biochemicals that I was talking about before. When you sweat in large quantities, it effectively gets your heart pumping very quickly because what's going on is that your veins are pushed up against the skin and hot blood is rushing by, and the sweat evaporation is cooling that hot blood rushing by that then returns to your core to cool it down. And so that means your heart is pumping very quickly. And so you do get, you know, the production of happy biochemicals, the same that you get when you do a run or another workout. And I think that that contributes to the kind of catharsis and joy that we get by going to a sauna.
Tell us about the World Sauna Theater Championships in the Netherlands.
Oh my
Oh
goodness.
my
This is
goodness, is
one of
right. That's pretty wild.
the one of the weirdest experiences and most wonderful experiences of my life. So, there's this thing that is called an Aufguss. And so, you know, often you go into a hot Finnish sauna and it's very dry, and then you add water to the rocks to create this steam. And in an Aufguss, which, you know, originates in German-speaking Europe, you kind of put essential oils into it. So that steam that like surrounds and swirls around you is filled with, you know, aroma of clementine or eucalyptus or whatever. Now, the World Sauna Theater Competition happens when this Aufguss ceremony is taken to a whole nother level. So the Aufguss master, and there are people called that, shows up with a towel and starts whipping that scented air around, but then also doing towel tricks like imagine like throwing the towel into the air. Also, they're performing a three-act play in 15 minutes. So they are wearing a costume, they're in makeup, there is a Videotron screen, there's 300 people in the sauna, and you know, special effects. Like I remember the one, my favorite is this guy Yuri, who, you know, did a story about conquering a mountain that had, you know, taken his brother. And he like showed up in a full snowsuit. It's like a 200 degree sauna. And he's got hiking boots and an ice pick, and he's like doing a towel dance, and then there's like dry ice to like mean an avalanche. Oh my God. The euphoria is hilarious, but also you know, the performance is just bananas and delightful.
Well, I'm sure there must be some YouTube videos
Oh,
that we
yes.
can check out for sure.
Yes, I can send you a link and you can tweet it out if you'd
Maybe,
like.
yeah, that sounds great. Oh, got a lot of comments. Here's Alex. I'm sweating more than ever this summer. Notice I've also got a heck of a lot of mosquito bites. Is there a connection? Do you know?
Yeah, so certainly I think mosquitoes are a lot more interested in the CO2, the carbon dioxide that we're breathing out. But you know, some people do say that they are mosquito attractants, and certainly I know that, you know, some of us smell a lot more delightful to those little insects than others.
Here's a question from Walt. When you need to recover from sweat, I've heard things like drinking pickle juice. Yes, no?
Whoa.
Whoa. That sounds like a
So
no.
I've heard a lot of stuff. It's funny though. The Germans have a drink called Sauerkrautsaft, which is sauerkraut juice. So it's like the watery parts of sauerkraut. So hell, you know, why not pickle juice? So here's the thing. When you are sweating, you are losing both water and salt, right? And so you do need to replenish both. But the sports drink industry will try and sell you like these sports drinks that are mostly just flat soda, like flat, what do you call it in Philly? Soda pop.
So yeah, some people do. Yep.
Yeah, and they claim that they're helping to restore your electrolytes. And certainly there's a lot of salt those sports drinks. But, you know, if you've ever tasted sweat, and I'm sure we all have, if not ours, then somebody else's, it's so salty. Like, can you imagine drinking a cup of that? There's no way that the concentrations of salt can be high enough in any over-the-counter drink that would allow you to replenish your electrolytes just simply by drinking. So typically, what you need to do is eat your salt and then replace your water. And however you want to drink, sure is fine. But, you know, many of these sports drinks have so much sugar in them to counter that awful taste of salt that you've just done a workout and you're kind of just counterbalancing that by drinking a flat soda. So, I would say drink what you want, but don't believe the hype.
Well, let's talk about perfumes, and you had some pretty interesting, and even, antiperspirant deodorants. When did that become a thing? And this would be marketing to people, men and women, about things like body odor.
Yeah, so for most of human history, we've dealt with our BO by washing with water, sometimes soap, and or, you know, lobbing on perfume to overwhelm our odor or to complement it. But around the turn of the century is when the invention of deodorants and antiperspirants began. And to understand how they work, you kind of have to know what causes our potent BO, the stuff that appears at puberty. And it is a second kind of sweat gland. We haven't talked about this one yet. So you have the sweat glands that make the watery stuff that helps you cool down. Well, at puberty, in your armpits, another kind of gland appears, and its sweat is kind of waxy, kind of more like earwax than the salty floods. And that wax is eaten by bacteria living in your armpit, and it turns that sweat into stink that's responsible for morphing armpits into stink zones during the teenage years and beyond. So effectively, your stink, that really potent stink that comes from your armpits, it's not really your fault. Your sweat comes out pretty odorless. It's that bacteria living in your armpit. And deodorants work by being antiseptics that effectively kill the bacteria living in your armpit for at least a short time, preventing them from eating your sweat and making it stinky. Whereas antiperspirants actually physically block the pores, effectively cutting off the buffet for those bacteria that live in your armpits. And yeah, they were invented in the 20th century. And at the time, nobody thought they needed it. But marketers use this thing called whisper copy to put social fears of isolation in us. So, I mean, we've all seen this whisper copy. Effectively, in 1919, a product called Odor Oh No became like the first blockbuster anti-sweat product because a marketer did this ad that went something like, you know, the curve of a woman's arm, you know, and he goes on to say, you know, it should be the most daintiest, beautiful thing ever, but actually, it's stinky. And not only that, there are people gossiping about it, and it's going to interfere with getting you a man. It's 1919. And, you know, after that, sales of Odor Oh No skyrocketed, and suddenly all the others went on to use the same strategy.
It's all her fault.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Well, let me do just a small digression, but I found it really interesting that you went to, it sounds like a perfume museum in the city of Versailles in France, where these ancient smells are kept and on display. Do I have that right?
Yeah. I recreated even. So, you know, for most of human history, we've relied on perfume. And there's a gentleman named Jean Carléau, and he, you know, was a perfumier. He was responsible for, you know, Lacoste's blockbuster perfumes and, you know, some other, you know, Sublime and 1000. And when he retired, he got interested in, you know, what did perfumes smell like in the past? And so he went back to some ancient recipes and started recreating perfumes of the past, including one that was like, you know, like from Pliny the Elder, Also, you know, smells from, you know, the plague years, you know, what were people putting on their bodies, not just to make them smell better, but to supposedly protect from the plague. You know, all sorts of really fascinating perfumes from the past. And yeah, it was an odorous journey of, you know, adventure to sniff through all of those really interesting perfumes.
And you described smelling, I'm not sure which, was it Pliny the Elder? I mean, you did smell some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. So Caillaux, you know, recreated, you know, this one recipe. You know, it was really hard because, you know, it's reliant. He used old techniques like, you know, maceration. And, you know, most perfumiers these days don't, you know, bake things out in the sun for, you know, 12 days straight, or have to source Ben nuts from Somalia as their ingredient. So it took him 2 years to recreate this 2,000-year-old perfume. It smelled like incense and apple crisp, actually. So it was kind of, it's just delicious.
Here are a couple more questions before we have to end our discussion. Here's a question from Ron. My wife sweats a lot more than I do when we hike. Is there an explanation why she sweats so much more than I do? And I don't know if this is a sex gender explanation or not, or whether just some people are bigger sweaters than others.
Yeah, well, I'm that wife. I also sweat more than my partner. But so here's the thing, you know, it's a mix of nature and nurture. So we all have, you know, between 2 and 5 million sweat glands. I have 3 million. And then we also have a genetic difference on, you know, the rate of sweat. So the flux out. So how fast your sweat pores are actually pumping that stuff out. And so that's determined by genetics. But then there's this nurture component where, you know, the first couple years of your life, your sweat glands are learning about the environment. So I don't know where this man's wife grew up, but it might have been a different place where it was, you know, a lot, you know, a different climate than him. And that might help to explain the differences. But yeah, it's also partly genetic. So, you know, blame your parents.
Here's a question from Jim. Is there anything to be said for throwing yourself into icy water or snow after a sauna?
Hell yes. Am I allowed to say that on the
you
radio?
You are.
yeah. So it's called the thermal cycle. And, you know, effectively to have that, you know, really amazing kind of biochemical catharsis from going to the sauna, what you want to do is go into a really, really hot place for as long as you can. So you're like sitting there thinking, you know, am I going to make it? And you wonder and you wonder and you push yourself and then you jump into the coldest water that you can or put on a freezing cold shower. And that, like, that contrast just really is glorious. And I got hooked. That's one of my favorite hobbies.
What happens, we're almost out of time here, but what obviously when you're jumping into a cold, icy bath, you're not sweating, right?
No, you are effectively shutting that down. But yeah, it's that contrast of really hot to really cold that just gives you a very delicious feeling.
Well, we're going to end on that note. Sarah Everts, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Really appreciate the book and our conversation.
I had so much fun. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, she joined us by Skype. She is a science journalist, professor at Carleton University School of Journalism in Canada, author of this new book we've been talking about called The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. And the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times is Al Banks. Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray-Bessler are the producers of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we're going to close things out with a song that was suggested by Peter Crimmins. It's called Sweat by the John Spencer Blues Explosion.
I see the gutter. Julius. Sweat!